Just to give you an idea of the previous verse, text 7, the translation reads, in executing devotional service, one has to see every living entity equally, without enmity towards anyone, yet without intimate connections with anyone. One has to observe celibacy, be grave, and execute his eternal activities, offering results to the Supreme Personality of God. So, being situated neutrally with regard to the circumstances of life, seeing the circumstances of life in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and focusing with concentration on service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in whatever the circumstance, and offering the results to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Very basic principles. Now, text 8 seems to be very much focused on Grihastha Ashram, the devotional service from the position of family life. It seems like this will be particularly relevant. The Sanskrit, Yadrich Chaya, Upamabhena, Santushto Mitabhun, Muni. Vivikta Sharana Shanto Maitra Karuna Atmavan. That's a nice list of elements. The Rishchaya Upalabdhina. For his income, a devotee should be satisfied with what he earns without great difficulty. He should not eat more than what is necessary. He should live in a secluded place, Bangalore, and always be thoughtful, peaceful, friendly, compassionate, and self-realized. Let's see about what he says about secluded place. Purport. And it's a nice long purport. Very practical instructions. Everyone who has accepted a material body must maintain the necessities of the body by acting or earning some livelihood. A devotee should only work for such income as is absolutely necessary. Then he says the negative. He should be satisfied always with such income and should not endeavor to earn more and more simply to accumulate the unnecessary. A person in the conditioned state who has no money is always found working very hard to earn earn money, with the object of lording it over material nature. Kapila Deva instructs that we should not endeavor hard for things which may come automatically without extraneous labor. The exact word in this connection, Yadrich Chaya, means that every living entity has a predestined happiness and distress in his present body. This is called the law of karma. It is not possible that simply by endeavors to accumulate more money, a person will be able to do so. Otherwise, almost everyone would be in the same level of wealth. In reality, everyone is earning and acquiring according to his predestined karma. According to the Bhagavatam conclusion, we are sometimes faced with dangerous or miserable conditions without endeavoring for them. And similarly, we may have prosperous conditions without endeavoring for them. We are advised to let these things come as predestined. We should engage our valuable time in prosecuting Krishna consciousness. In other words, one should be satisfied by his natural condition. And he says it again. If, by predestination, one is put into a certain condition of life which is not very prosperous in comparison to another's position, one should not be disturbed. It should simply try to utilize his valuable time to advance in Krishna consciousness. Advancement in Krishna consciousness does not depend on any materially prosperous or distressed condition. Semicolon. It is free from the conditions imposed by material life. A very poor man can execute Krishna consciousness as effectively as a very rich man. One should therefore be very satisfied with his position as offered by the Lord. There's more, but that's very important. Practical instruction. Elsewhere, this word yadrich chaya, particularly Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur uses it to indicate inexplicable. He translates it as somehow or other. Like, don't try to understand specifically how the living entity comes into the material condition. Yadrishchaya. You know that one. The fall of the jiva. Yadrishchaya. As Prabhupada warns in Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, don't try to understand that which is yadrishchaya. It's not within our present capacity of grasping why. You can ask, it's okay to ask the question why, but don't obsess about it because it's not understandable in our present circumstance. Rather, Prabhupada says, when we become free from material conditioning, then we'll understand. Just one of those things. So, here it's being used in a similar but different way. Yadrishchaya upalabdhena. Upalabdhena, upalabdha is to obtain something. So, our body requires things. It's the necessities. So, for those necessities, accept what is by nature arranged for you. Just to put it in really simple language. Say yes to Krishna. These are my circumstances. I'll make a practical plan and within reason endeavor according to that practical plan as best as the intelligence that Krishna gives me and the resources that I can access to help me. I will make a practical plan and I'll strive according to that practical plan. But not, you know, the advice against is don't make over-endeavor. Over-endeavor destroys bhakti. Over-endeavor, by principle, means I'm forgetting Krishna. If I am remembering Krishna, there must be things that I'm doing in order to remember Krishna. I'm hearing and chanting and performing my core devotional activity processes. And then there's my work. And in my work, some practical plan, and striving according to a reasonable effort. Effort is required, prayasa. But what scripture is advising us not to do is prayasa that's, well, two. It's excessive. It's just not meant to be. And if it's not meant to be, you know, excessively, obsessively endeavor. You make a reasonable effort. And the other side is, in the sense of false ego, doership, kartaham iti manyate, I'm going to make it happen. And we all know very well that mentality. We're trained in that mentality. Educated young people that have these nice situations in life. We're taught and encouraged and pushed from childhood. You can do it. Strive. Get that, do well in that exam. Get that admission and get that degree and get that job and you can do it. And then if it's a little bit less than someone else, oh, you're not working hard enough. You're not. We all know the whole program. It's competition, material competition. It's not God consciousness. We're trained up in not God consciousness. It's just the atmosphere. And the training here is God consciousness. So specific. I mean, it's so important. Maintenance or seeing to the necessities of life. What's that? Seeing to the necessities of life or maintenance is so important. It's one of the six principles of surrender. Anukoyasya sankalpa pratikoyasya varjanam. One of them is goptritve varanam tava, seeing Krishna as one's maintainer. It's really fundamental to being in a relationship with Krishna, that he is my maintainer. It's in the peace formula, 529 Bhagavad Gita. Bhoktanam yakatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram suradam sarvabhutanam yatamam shantim rishyati. Krishna is our maintainer. It's one of the essential things to be peaceful. It's one of the essential things to be in a relationship with Krishna. He's maintaining me. Secularism is a different beast. It's, there's what I do for God and worship God and offer something, puja and something prayers. And then over here is my worldly life. And my worldly life is separate from my spiritual life. Through the two buckets. And bhakti, as taught in Bhagavad Gita and as taught here by Kapila Dev, it's one bucket. It's one entity. It's whatever it is, yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, yad dasi, whatever we do, it's for Krishna. So including endeavoring and including recognizing what it is that maintains me. It's Krishna that's maintaining me. It's not my effort. False ego says it's my effort. And Krishna consciousness says, Krishna. There's a relationship. I'm serving. Krishna is the master who I'm serving. And Krishna is maintaining me. Go back to the context. The previous chapters, all this very complicated Sankhya stuff. All the material elements and woven together and making it look like that's all there is. Like mechanistic science says that's all there is. There's matter. And there's the laws that govern matter. And there's nothing else. There's nothing else. And anybody that thinks there's something else is foolish. We'll prove it. We'll show that anything can happen just by matter and the laws governing matter. You just have to learn technology and the push and pull and how to make matter do what matter does. Because there's nothing else. It's atheism. And we're in an atheistic society. Although there's, the stratum of theism, science and technology is taking us swiftly into the realm of atheism. And we're going along for the ride, chanting our realms. But that's the atmosphere in which we're finding ourselves. So it's bhakti, these are elements of bhakti, requires seeing the distinction between matter and the controller of matter and the living entity who's serving master of matter and the master of us. And he's the one that's supplying
our necessities. That's Krishna consciousness. And it's a paradigm shift. Nature. From material consciousness to Krishna consciousness, or spiritual consciousness. And how you consider work, it's a big deal in developing Krishna consciousness. Consider the makeup of Bhagavad Gita. The first thing that Arjuna wants to know is, what is my duty? The first thing that Krishna responds to is, before we speak about duty, let's speak about who you are. Samkhya. Same. And then comes bhuti. How to stay fixed in that consciousness of you're the servant of the Supreme. That's bhuti. Jyavasayatnika bhuti ekeha kurunandana. And Arjuna doesn't get it. Because Krishna's more or less gesturing to the battlefield and saying, engage in bhuti yoga out there on the battlefield. So Arjuna, chapter 3 begins. Arjuna says, wait a minute. You say that knowledge is better than fruitive work, so why are you asking me to do that? Ghastly warfare. Because he's thinking spiritual means you don't do something. So how do you do something and remain spiritual? It's essential to understand the bhakti element is working for Krishna. And he's my maintainer. And if you don't understand that, you're caught in this, you know, this language that says, how do I balance between my worldly duties and my Krishna consciousness? You know that message. It's universal. It's not balance. It's everything is Krishna conscious activities. And how to stay fixed in Krishna consciousness. There's certain things that help me stay fixed in Krishna consciousness, and I have my necessities. And I do those in Krishna consciousness too. And the advice here is, yadrishchaya upalabdhena. Be satisfied, santushta. Be satisfied with that which is obtained by natural sequence, natural arrangements. And by natural arrangements, some prosper and some don't. It's something like, you know, the King Chitraketu narration from the 6th canto. It just wasn't meant for him to have a son. It just wasn't meant to happen. But he somehow wanted it to happen. So instead of just marrying one wife, he married a second and a third and a fourth. And you know how many wives he had? He had more wives than Krishna had. 100,000 queens. No son. A little light should have gone on saying it's just not meant to happen. But it was, you know, he wasn't accepting. So the position for us is we accept. This is my circumstance. This is the level of prosperity that is appropriate for me. And I don't hanker to get more. You know, fruit of activity says more. Always. And whatever it is, it's got to be more. Isn't it? It's without elaborating. If one has this much, I think, well, I'll be happy if I get that much. And you get that much, well, if I had double that much. It just goes on and on. Dushparena. Analingacha. It's like fire. It burns. It's never satisfied. Never enough. Because we're spirit soul, and no matter however much mad you have, it's never enough to bring happiness. You want more. I remember one time I was distributing books in JFK Airport, New York. And it was the old Pan Am building. It was like, you know, some years ago. And I approached the end of the Bhagavad Gita and his wife, a prosperous man and his wife, obviously well off materially. And I don't know why he spoke the way he spoke, but as I was presenting Bhagavad Gita and describing what his message was, he took the book in his hand and said, you know, something like, I wish my life was simple again, like this is describing. Because I've gone through life going further and going further and going further, and I have everything that money can buy, and my life is so complicated and I'm so free from a position of being, or devoid of a position of peacefulness. When I had that situation, when I was thinking I would be happy if I had more, I wish I was in that situation again and just accept it. Because now I'm on this treadmill and I have to maintain a profile. I have to run here and run there and do things. And I have no time for myself. And then he like stopped and said, I'd like to read this book. I said, okay. I'd like you to read the book too. It's the lure of Maya is very powerful. Even we know, we still succumb. So bhakti requires a brake pedal on that tendency. Not just to say no, but more importantly to say yes to the spiritual aspect of life. And the happiness then in turn comes from that spiritual aspect of life. And then in turn, very naturally, an easy, not a painful, like, you know, it hurts, austerity kind of saying no, but a happy no. No, thank you. Like from time to time, devotees ask, I was offered a promotion. Should I accept it? And then I ask, well, what does it mean? What will you be obliged to do with this promotion? You know, without the detail, it means less time with my family, less time with sadhana, more expectations, interrupted round the clock to do whatever is the emergency thing to connect it with, you know, overseeing something or other. And, you know, I just, rather than saying, no, don't do it, just, is that really what you want? Do you need that extra money? Do you need the sense of feeling gratified that another rung on the corporate ladder? And some people need it. And anyway, you get the idea. Just the value system in a life of devotion is accept what is necessary, and otherwise with a big smile it's no. And it goes over into the next thing, mitabuk, eating, same, eat what's necessary, and even it may be very palatable and you don't eat more than necessary, earn what's necessary, eat what's necessary. Neutral towards the lure of happiness of material attraction. Neutral. Here's the next paragraph. Another word used here is mitta, book. Mitta means little, and book means eating. Mitta book. This means that one should eat only as much as necessary to maintain the body and soul together. One should not be gluttonous to satisfy the tongue. Grains, fruits, milk, and similar foods are allotted to him for human consumption. One should not be excessively eager to satisfy the tongue and eat that which is not meant for humanity. Particularly, a devotee should eat only prasad, or food which is offered to the personality of Godhead. His position is to accept the remnants of those foodstuffs, innocent foods, like grains, vegetables, fruits, flowers, and milk preparations, are offered to the Lord, and therefore there is no scope for offering foods which are on the mode of passion and ignorance. A devotee should not be greedy. Then the last word in the second line is muni. So Prabhupada discusses that one. It is also recommended that the devotee should be a muni, or thoughtful, semicolon. He should always think of Krishna and how to render better service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That should be his only anxiety. As a materialist is always thoughtful about improving his material condition, a devotee's thoughts should always be engaged in improving his condition in Krishna consciousness. Said he called him, therefore he should be a muni. Two more paragraphs. The next phrase is vivikta sharana. That's living in Bangalore. Living in a secluded place. Vivikta sharana. Generally, a common man is interested in pounds, shillings, and pence, or materialistic advancement in life, which is unnecessary for a devotee. A devotee should select a place of residence where everyone is interested in devotional service. Generally, therefore, a devotee goes to a sacred place of pilgrimage where devotees live. It is recommended that he live in a place where there is no large number of ordinary men. It is very important to live in a secluded place, the Vikta Sharana. So, here we are. And temples that Prabhupada created were in the opposite of the Vikta Sharana places. So, here we are in such a place. And I'm a sannyasi coming to spend time with you. So, and Prabhupada established temples in those places. So the intention of so doing, and for you in your lives, is to, in your home at least, that place where you, it's your ashram, Grihastha ashram, make that place a transcendental place. So like an oasis in the middle of a desert, or a place of serenity in the midst of chaos, so that one can, for the purpose of maintenance, go into the city and engage in one's duties of life. I mean, just think of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as a grihastha. He lived in cities. He lived in Puri, was magistrate, chief justice, with all kinds of, because of that government position, all kinds of social obligations. And he met those social obligations. But in his ashram, in his home, he was fully Krishna conscious and absorbed himself in hearing and reading and writing and, you know, Krishna conscious activities that filled him up. So that when he was giving association, he wasn't taking unholy association. So that's something that those who live in cities, each of us, need to consider. That principle, here's something else that Prabhupada taught, you know, the five most potent things out of the 64 items of devotional service. Chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity form of the Lord, serving the devotees of the Lord, and residing in a sacred place. That's this vivikta sharana. So if we can't, by circumstance, live in a holy place, we can hanker for living in a holy place. One can make a plan in the course of the maturing stages of life, live in a holy place. And in the meanwhile, make one's home a sacred place. And hanker for that opportunity where I can, and from time to time, go and visit the holy place and receive just exactly what Prabhupada did. Exactly. He arranged a place for us in Mayapur, a place for us in Vrindavan when there was nothing. And he encouraged us from the West specifically, but you know, you can do the same here, to go once a year for the Mayapur Vrindavan festival. So became known as, to become cleansed and purified from our activities and our preaching life as devotees, and then go back to that place, you know, the opposite of the Vivek-Dasharana place, for preaching. So similarly, in your situations as earning householders, or working young men and women, part of your purification is extending Krishna consciousness to others. Minimally, just by carrying bhakti within your heart while in the workplace, you can, in a good sense, infect others in the workplace with bhakti, just by your qualities, your character, your conduct, and so forth. It says bhakti is transmitted that way. It's like Ebola. It's transmitted just by contact. Only we don't even require physical contact. Just, you know, carry bhakti. And think of yourself in that way. I'm Krishna's little emissary. His instrument in this workplace. The sannyasi isn't going to come into the workplace, but I can, because I'm a worker. And I'm carrying bhakti that I've received. And I'm eager for the opportunity for it to be transmitted to others. And you're protected. You're creating a spiritualized atmosphere in the workplace. I mean, it's challenging, but that's how one can remain protected and be effective as an instrument of Bodhicitta. And then other than just the workplace, from time to time, as different circumstances permit, contact other people explicitly, book distribution or festivals or whatever, outreach, reaching out to people, and giving Krishna to others. It's protection. It's helping to fulfill this item that Kapila Deva is speaking to Devahuti. So we'll go on. Next. The next item is shanta, or peacefulness. The devotee should not be agitated. He should be satisfied with his natural income, eat only as much as he needs to keep his health, live in a secluded place, and always remain peaceful. Peace of mind is necessary for prosecuting Krishna consciousness. And that, again, that peacefulness is feeling Krishna's shelter, including Krishna is my maintainer, and the circumstances of my life, Krishna is well aware of. He's in charge of the material energy. And I simply need to say yes to Krishna, accept his arrangements, and serve. That's peaceful. Last paragraph. The next time is maitra, friendliness. A devotee should be friendly to everyone, but his intimate friendship should be with the devotees only. With others, he should be official. He may say, yes, sir, what you say is all right. But he is not intimate with them. A devotee should, however, have compassion for persons who are innocent, who are neither atheistic nor very much advanced in spiritual realization. A devotee should be compassionate towards them and instruct them as far as possible in making advancement in Krishna consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, Prabhupada was a householder as well in the early stages of his life. Bhaktivinoda Thakur as well. And he is very explicit, elaborate instructions in his teachings about life of a householder. You know, that in his, he wrote a whole book just on the six items, Shadbir Bhakti Prasidyati, Shadbir Bhakti Pranashati, from there for instruction. And there's one section in both of those verses that deal with not associating with worldly-minded people. And he gives very same instructions. He said, for a householder, because it's said, one should not associate with worldly people. For those of you that work in an office, how are you supposed to fulfill that one? Dr. Vinod Thakur says, in the office, in that work situation, you express yourself in a cordial manner. You're friendly. Maitra. Oh yes, very nice. So just casual, how are you today? You know, friendly conversation. But the restraint is, don't engage in inquiry from them, what do you think I should do about my teenage daughter? What do you think I should do about, you know, my something, 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 situation at home, or with something, investment. You know how people investing money and this and that, the other thing. Just don't do that. Don't do that. Especially, you know, in relation to matters of your spiritual life that impact your spiritual life. You discuss those with devotees and other spiritually confidential type of things. That's where your real friendship is, and the other is cordial. That's the advice for householders on this topic. And we're one more item to go. A devotee should always remain atmavan, or situated in his spiritual position. He should not forget that his main concern is to make advancement in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, and he should not ignorantly identify himself with the body or the mind. Atma means the body or the mind. But here, the word atmavan especially means that one should be self-possessed or situated in the soul. He should always remain in the pure consciousness that he is spirit soul and not the material body or the mind that will make him progress confidently in Krishna consciousness, which is a nice conclusion to like the section. Again, some of you came a little later. The previous section is a very complex, intricate Samkhya discussion, ending with Krishna is the source of all of that, and the living entity is different than all of that. So we have these three categories: matter, spirit, and the controller of both. But like detailed. And then this chapter is how to extricate the soul from the implications of matter. And he indicates bhakti. He indicates others that are incomplete, knowledge and renunciation and incomplete. So complete is bhakti, now he's describing elements of bhakti. So this is the conclusion, is atmanam, be situated in the self by the agency of the book bhakti. Seeing, we'll just go through the items. Seeing our maintenance, that's an item of bhakti. Krishna is my maintainer. Seeing that which I need for my foodstuffs. Take what is necessary and within the right category of things and just keep it simple. Other living entities, we're social beings, we need, and we're in an atmosphere where social exchanges are there. How to conduct ourselves, be friendly towards everyone, but not intimate with everyone. Spiritually intimate with everyone. And living in a secluded place. Be situated in the self. So these are very practical instructions. Really practical. Not difficult to, you know, end the session and say, well, how do I practically apply this? It's very practical. Just one last thing. This whole discussion, like there's several chapters, it's responded to one question by Devahuti, who is asking her son, how do I become free from the blindedness that comes from family attachment? The circumstance is, her husband, Karamuni, has just left. After being married with Karamuni for tens of thousands of years. So those of you that are married and you've been living with someone for a few years, imagine tens of thousands of years. And imagine that the person you're married to is a perfected being. And how you may feel attachment to that person. Only she's saying family attachment, not just, you know, spiritual attachment. So Kapila Dev is responding to that. Now the identification with the body. How do you deal with that? So ours is not with tens of thousands of years of bodily attachment. But just the affinity for matter program that who knows how many lifetimes, countless numbers of lifetimes, affinity for matter, trying to practice Krishna consciousness and be Krishna conscious and be happy and go back to Godhead and all those nice things that are euphemisms only if we're not detached. Performing duties in this neutral position, like the previous verse is describing. Attached to the Supreme, as the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Ekeva Kurunandanas. It's Buddhi Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. It's a stage of perfection. How do we get there from our present situation of having affinity for matter? So practical advice. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Maharaj, as you mentioned that it's very practical that in these circumstances we can still maintain our Krishna business and practice.
It's often that as we go to the outside world in our offices and all,
lot of talks are mostly self-gratificatory
and all. And devotees tend to think, oh, something like if we have these luxuries, we can make our lives comfortable and make Krishna consciousness easy. And at times, interaction with women is also more, which also disturbs the consciousness.
Yeah.
So it appears impractical under those circumstances. So what do you think?
Life is so much simpler as a sannyasi. But as a sannyasi, I travel a lot. And as I travel a lot, I also see people, like, you know, the seat next to me when I'm traveling in a plane or something, involved in those things. And one of the advices, core advice for a sannyasi, is one has a duty to go door to door and, you know, receive alms but give Krishna consciousness to others. But one should not think, oh, this is very nice. They're living very comfortably and maybe I'm missing out on something. So that's a no-no for a sannyasi, and a no-no for a householder is similar. You're there for a purpose. It's not just, you know, earn a living so that your family will have maintenance. That's, that certainly that's an element, but there's a higher element. And the protection for the householder is to be conscious of that higher purpose. For you and for them. For you, the purification needed to be detached from sense gratification in an atmosphere that's suitable for you as a householder as opposed to suitable for a sannyasi. But somewhere along the line, somebody makes a decision and says, I think it's appropriate for me to be in household ashram. So now, what's appropriate for one in a household ashram is to cultivate detachment from sense gratification in the household ashram, where the objects of the senses are there, and I don't indulge in indiscriminately or irreligiously or needlessly involving myself in the objects of the senses. That's the householder's challenge, different than the challenge of the sannyasi. So the strength to do that comes from the higher mission. You're being given an opportunity through instructions and all the other support structures that are there for the life of a devotee to achieve that. And to, as I've been saying here earlier, to be Krishna's instrument to give bhakti to others in the workplace. So you have a higher mission. It's not just restraint. It's purification and giving. And forget that higher mission, and then it's a struggle. It's very simple. In language, it's very simple. So it's embracing the duty of a householder, the mission of Krishna conscious household life in a situation like you just described. For you as a householder, if there is something, simultaneously, the principal instruction is given, simplify please, nivritti. If it's not needed, if it's factual and useful, but my advice to householders is think at least 5 times, if not 10 times, before you acquire something. Do I really need this? Or is it fashion and something else? Do I really need it? Is it really going to enhance? And then if it is, enhance my Krishna consciousness, then I accept it on that basis only. And not, maybe I should have 3 of them. And then that which is for Krishna's service, I use it in Krishna's service because that's the purpose of it. And not otherwise. I don't need the latest model and the upgraded technology and this and that. Just for service. Simple. So the rocket fuel is shelter in Krishna's service. And that's the basis of deciding. And then the contemplation of, it simplifies everything. That's bhakti. And when bhakti muscle is strong, you can easily resist something that has nothing to do with bhakti. It's just like, silly. Like a child that has a toy and sees another child that has a toy, and I want the toy too. That's, bhakti is the protection from that. One of the last domestic flights I took in America before I came to overseas was Southwest Airlines, which in America they don't assign seats. You just board the plane, then you sit where you want to sit. So I like the aisle seat. So 2 people that didn't know each other chose the other 2 seats. And the flight was about 2.5 hours, and the whole 2.5 hours they were talking about the latest little device. And they, one had 3, the other had 3, and they're talking about the latest one, and this one does this, and maybe I should get one too. 2.5 hours. And then the other guy over here, in a suit, going to a business meeting, he was obsessively playing one of those little games on one of those little devices. It's just like balls that move around. And as soon as the plane landed, he got his device out, he's playing the game again. It dulls one's brain. You know, the higher purpose of life is stolen away. I don't want that. You don't want that. Don't do that. Don't succumb to that kind of talk and, you know, distraction. We have enough distractions. If something is necessary, think about it at least 5 times, right? And just like put it on the shelf over there and let's see what happens. I don't really need it. So just forget it. There's plenty of things that are important. So driven by that higher principle, you're protected. Just like that. Something else? Yeah.
How do we get protected by giving Krishna consciousness to others?
Lord Chaitanya's mercy has helped. It's have you been in situations, festivals, or Harinam, or something, book distribution, or something like that, where you're very clearly in the mindset of giving the message of Krishna to others? You've been. Not so much. When you are, there's protection. You can be in situations where people are doing all kinds of nonsense. Our devotees, our book distributors, for example, or sometimes we have, you know, festivals where there's an existing festival, like a Rath Yatra festival in the West, that's like, that, for example, in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Our Rath Yatra is part of the Independence Day parade in Washington, D.C. We're just one part of that. And it's nationally televised. There's a zillion people all over the place. Downtown, and, you know, the Washington Monument and Lincoln Memorial and the White House and that whole big thing. And we have our, you know, exhibit right in the middle of it. Our tents and our book booths and prasadam and Rath Yatra. So we're in the midst of, and at night it's this big fireworks thing. So it's sense gratification. Mundane sense gratification. But we're not there for that. We're there for another purpose. And when you're there for another purpose, it's not distracting, because you're there on a mission. Some devotees I know were visiting in Udupi, and they made some friendship with some of the sannyasis, and so they were hearing so much about Prabhupada, they wanted to know more, the sannyasis. So they showed this video, Your Ever Well Wisher, and one of the scenes was Prabhupada in Golden Gate Park, San Francisco, surrounded by hippies, playing kartals and absorbed in chanting Hare Krishna. And at the end they said, you know, we could never do that. Swamiji is doing something we could never do. But, you know, the difference is, it was for mission, Lord Chaitanya's order. And so Swamiji was protected. And, you know, we're little people. We can't do what he did. But we're protected. If you're in the mood of giving, you're not taking unwholesome association. You're waiting for the opportunity, like Krishna's arrangement, to give Krishna. And if you're not in that consciousness, you're looking around saying, you know, maybe they're having fun. Maybe I'm missing out on something. Or just like hearing some unpleasant talk about, without repeating what people say. You know, what's in politics, and what's, you know, their financial investments, or their sexual exploitations with this and that, the other thing. And awful. And just having to hear that is awful. But if one is in the mood of these unfortunate people, somehow, Krishna, please give me the opportunity to give Krishna conscious message to them somehow. Please give me the intelligence. You're protected. Even if it doesn't happen. Thinking in that way, you're protected from the external energy, because you're in the internal energy. You're on a mission on behalf of Lord Chaitanya. And that's our life as devotees. Something else?
Yes. Hare Krishna Maharaj, I just wanted to know if Shiva is also a demigod and what is the importance of Lord Shiva?
Classic. Okay. Sri Brahma Samhita. You familiar with Sri Brahma Samhita?
No.
Yo Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. That's the Govinda prayer portion of Brahma Samhita. And there are three verses in those 62 verses of Brahma Samhita where the position of Lord Shiva is identified. So you might want to read them. One of them has to do with the abodes of Lord Shiva, of the abodes of creation. Bhavokanami vijitani tadeja tasya devi maheshu haridama suteshu teshu te te prabhava niyatashvi yitashchayena Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So, the position of the Dhamma, or the abodes of, in an ascending fashion, Devidam, Maheshdam, Haridam, and Golokadam. Maheshdam is above Devidam, and it's below Haridam. So it's mysterious. Because you go beyond the coverings of the universe. And what's on the other side of the coverings of the universe is the causal ocean. The universes are floating in the causal ocean. And on the other side, the other shore of that ocean, is the Brahmajyoti. And actually, even the causal ocean and the universes are within the Brahmajyoti. But the abode of Lord Shiva is neither here nor there. So where is it? It's mysterious. It's another dimension, or another realm. Maheshdam. And he is similarly mysterious. Because he has abode in Sanashiva Loka, in Shiva Loka, in Kailash, and Mahakalapur. Those are four different places. Because they're different expansions of him for different functions. And with, you know, if there's more time, you can elaborate on, you know, this puzzling position of Lord Shiva. But another one of the verses in Brahma Samhita describes the position of Lord Shiva as receiving the power to do what he does from Govinda. He's compared, you know this verse, he's compared to, as dahi is nothing but a transformation of milk, but not milk. So the dahi is Lord Shiva and the milk is Vishnu. Earlier in Brahma Samhita, another verse, he's the halo of the glance of Mahavishnu. You're familiar. Mahavishnu glances over the field of material energy, Pradhan. Rama Devi, the internal potency of Mahavishnu, she's his internal potency, so she knows his desire. Icha. He desires to see the living entities that are within his transcendental body as having the opportunity, at least, for full consciousness instead of this susupti state during cosmic annihilation. Rama Devi knows his desire. So she performs that which is necessary to fulfill his desire. That's what she does. So she takes those living entities and entrusts the living entities to Shambhu, who is the halo of the glance of Mahavishnu, along with time energy,
which is one of her subpotencies, living entities, and time energy are transferred by Rama Devi to Shambhu, who then impregnates Pradhan. So he's the father of all living entities. But where does he get the power to do that? From Mahavishnu. So that's a long answer to you. It can be much longer too. His position is he derives his power to do what he does from Mahavishnu or ultimately from Govinda. His position is different, distinct from the other demigods that are within Devidam, that are controllers of the affairs of the universe. Although one of his abodes, one of his multiple abodes, is Kailash, which appears to be within Devidam, but it's not. It's puzzling. So he's not exactly the same as Indra and, you know, the controllers of the elements and, you know, the conducting the affairs of the material creation, those devatas. He's like them but distinct from them. But similar to them, he's deriving his power to do what he does from the Supreme Lord, Mahavishnu or Govinda ultimately. It's a very complex, very involved and complex subject to understand Lord Shiva. But you asked the question, so. Yes?
I have a two-part question. The first part is that the principle you mentioned, that seeing the circumstances in the relationship to Krishna.
Could you say it again? Someone was coughing.
Seeing the circumstances in relationship to Krishna.
The dog is barking. Say it again.
Seeing the circumstances.
Seeing our circumstances.
In relationship to Krishna.
In relation to Krishna, okay.
So the part A is what it means to be.
What does it mean to be?
Yeah. And the part B is that how do we apply this principle when there are reversals in our life?
How do we see our circumstances in relation to Krishna?
Yeah.
Well, that's easy. You have a daughter. Yes? And the circumstances in which she lives, you've arranged. So how does she see the circumstances in which she lives in relation to her father? He's arranged them. The furniture, now, you know, everything. You've arranged it. And then you're small. Krishna's big. The whole of the material energy is under his direction. Not a blade of grass moves without the sanction. A super soul. Mayata chain of prakriti. So now step back from that understanding and look at the circumstances of your life and say, what's Krishna's role in all of this? It's his arrangement. Now, if I was going to plan things, I would do it differently. I'd have it like this and like that and so forth. But Krishna knows what we need and Krishna knows what we deserve. And through the medium of devotional service, we can come to transcend the circumstances and the contaminations of heart that bring about the circumstances. That's the deserved part. We can transcend that through the medium of devotional service. It's very merciful. Radharani is very merciful. Bhakti Devi is her expansion, and she can carry us beyond the circumstances. But, you know, what's holding us back is our condition of heart. The condition of heart that doesn't allow us to see our circumstances in relation to, you know, the sanctioner of our circumstances. We're disconnected. Consciousness is disconnected from Krishna. So that's, you know, one is, the first part is knowledge. Krishna is the controller of everything.
And the second part is bhakti. We can factually see vedeshu durlabham adurlabham adhavakta. We can factually see through the medium of bhakti. That's the first part of your question. Now the second part of your question, is that addressed?
Yes, Maharaj. The second part is that, you know, when one is in some trying situation or
with kind?
Trying situation.
Trying?
Difficult situation.
Okay, conflict.
Conflict situation.
Welcome to life.
So in that situation, we get so overwhelmed that we forget that Krishna is the controller, and in that situation...
Oh, you forgot long before that.
So, applying this principle is something that is very far, that this is all about the situation.
Yes, there's a big gap between what we know and where we are. That we're all very familiar with that big gap. So what to do? Commensurate with one's faith. Pause. Commensurate with one's faith, we take steps in the direction of what we know, recognizing where we're at. We had this, you know, we have these seminars in Gita Nagari. So the last one we had was Memorial Weekend 2014. It was acceptance and progress. Exactly on this point, you know, here's where I am, here's the goal. How to not be in denial and pretend or whatever, and imagine we're something that we're not or whatever. How do we factually understand our situation and then go from there? Rather than lament and say, oh, the goal is too far, I quit, or something. Just lament, oh. How do we make the next step? And all the persons speaking had that theme. It was really nice. So listen to those recordings. It's not just, you know, what I was speaking. All the devotees spoke very nicely on that point, that theme. Because that's the question, the gap. Most of the time, we don't even know how far from the goal we are. In many cases, we're not really clear what the goal is. You know, we have some sentimental idea of what the goal is, but not a really clear idea of what the goal is. Not just, you know, people in this room, just people of the world. What's the goal? Not clear. Some kind of sentiment, but not clear. So be clear. What does it mean to be Krishna conscious? What does it mean to, you know, what's the goal? And then practical steps. Just like the discussion we had in, you know, in Hyderabad on that particular topic. This is where I am, that's where I need to be. How do I make steps to get to syndrome? Something that's practical, measurable. I can regularly incorporate that in my life and build on that. Like physical therapy. Oh, it was an accident, I can't lift my arm. Well, can you do this? Okay, do 30 of those. Every day. You get the idea. Then gradually, you have a good physical therapist, things come back to normal. The body heals itself. These many cases. So, spiritually, same. Vaidhi leads to spontaneous. Just be properly guided. And then, according to the prescription of qualified persons, progress. Incrementally progress and progress and progress and progress. And then they become, you know, healthy again. Spiritually healthy. The gap closes. The biggest part is the surrender. When you surrender, the gap closes a whole lot. And so it's rather than for your own effort, it's
Krishna.
Big difference. Huge difference. Okay. Two last questions over here and over here and then.
Maharaj, you said that being a part of the missionary activity, although we may be in the bad association, still we remain in good consciousness. So how to get that mood of being a part of missionary activity of God?
How to get the sense of being part of the mission? Well, read Prabhupada's books and associate with those who are part of the mission. Those two things, through sound and through association. One who reads Prabhupada's books carefully gets, you know, connected. It's not just the message of bhakti is not a salvationist message. It's the opposite. Salvationist is, I'm out of here, you know, I want, these people are crazy, I want to get out of this place. And it's just about me. And the message of bhakti is not that. It's about Krishna. And the mission, particularly Lord Chaitanya, the mission of giving Krishna. You can't give that which you don't have, so I have to carefully receive. And one who does outreach will learn. So supposing, you know, you have to give a class. And you realize, gee, I need to study more. Just by giving a class. So you study more, and it goes in more, because you're going to have to give it. Or anything. We're more attentive and more submissive and, like, you know, everything. We're empowered. So that, and associating with those that have that spirit. Go on book distribution with devotees that distribute books. Or something. Those devotees that know, like to organize festivals, you know, do something with them. And you just do that association. It comes. I guess the third is the instruction to do so. That's what Prabhupada is feeling unqualified. But he's the weight of Bhaktisiddhanta's instruction. There's this beautiful passage from a book that Mulukukriti, Prabhupada's disciple, wrote, where Prabhupada, it was in, as a householder, Prabhupada periodically would, because his home was in Calcutta, he would go to these times, he would go to Mayapur, and he would take the association of the advanced Vaishnavas in Mayapur. You know, the Gaudiya Math centers and so on. Then this instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta go to the West. So Mulukukriti writes that there was a pujari at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's place in Shantipur. That one time he saw a sannyasi sitting near one of the, there's a little shrine where Lord Chaitanya, Nityananda, and the Dvaitacharya would sit and plan, you know, the missionary work. Say, Prabhupada was sitting there chanting, crying, this elderly sannyasi. And the pujari came and asked him, you know, what is it? Are you okay? He said, my Guru Maharaj has asked me to do something very difficult. And I'm praying for this mercy. And then that was the, if it turns out, that was the, by date, it was the very day before Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta in Calcutta. Years passed, and the same pujari later saw these Western people coming and coming, you know, in And then you have this Bhaktivedanta magazine, and you start the Bhaktivedanta magazine. That's the same person. Then you share this with the devotees. So, Prabhupada got the impetus by the order to do so. He was feeling himself not qualified. That's natural. One's feeling oneself qualified, that's a disqualification. On the instruction to do so, go and preach. So when that instruction goes into the heart, there's strength and capacity and power beyond one's own little ability. It's not about one's little ability. It's about the strength of Krishna. That's what the potency is, not us. That's how. So those are three. Yes?
How can one advance in Krishna consciousness?
If the partner is not
supportive.
Depends on the circumstance. How to it depends on the circumstance. I mean, depends on the circumstance. Ideal is together we, husband and wife, help one another to progress in Krishna consciousness, but there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of circumstances where either the husband or the wife is not so inclined. And it's especially difficult if the husband or the wife is like strongly negative. So that's a circumstance. And it's another thing if the husband or wife is not involved, but doesn't interfere. I'm not inclined, but I can see you're very good. So, in those circumstances, best is, cultivate your Krishna consciousness inwardly and be careful to not overwhelm your spouse externally with being overbearing and demanding and excessive to the point where they're intimidated. So your chanting and your devotional life is internal. It's unfortunate. I mean, I was recently in China. I had to share this with somebody that's in a similar situation. Without all the details, they certainly would like their spouse to participate with them and be as enthusiastic as possible. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. There's in that circumstance, it's not going to happen. So the worry of their spouse is they may become a fanatic and so forth. So, in that circumstance, their duty is to do their role as mother and wife and earning money, because in China, earning money is really important. I earn lots of money, and more money, and more money. So, she has a highly placed position in life, and do that not like obsessively, but dutifully. And continue. That'll keep her husband happy. And, et cetera, et cetera. So just cultivate Krishna consciousness inwardly. And there's other support structures other than her husband. It's just accept it. Don't be in anxiety. It's not what is not what it isn't. Just accept it. Just, you know, say yes to Krishna. That's Krishna's arrangement for me in this lifetime. Now, that, by my good example, then perhaps slowly my spouse will start to think, well, this is, they're doing their duties very nicely, and they're very happy, and they're very pleasant, and this is good. They're just finding material things, external things. But inwardly, you know, the strength is Krishna, and this individual seeing how their whole life in the workplace, at home, with the relatives is changing because of the happiness and contentment and the spiritual strength that's there in their life. People go, you know, wow, you become really nice. Used to be kind of edgy. Now you're just so peaceful, so pleasant. Ways by which worldly people value something. Whatever it is in your life, that's good. Keep doing it. That kind of response. Not like support, but just like, hey, that's good. And that may not happen, but even if it doesn't happen, you know, strive that way. Externally be, you know, be a good wife and a good mother and a good, whatever it is, relative. And then there's certain lines you just don't cross. Other things. And they, well, that's just the way she is, okay. But she's very nice, very pleasant, very happy. You can see she's radiant, she's very happy. This is good. Like that. And your other resources are from other places. Devotee Association. Srila Prabhupada ki.